This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 28th of December, 2021. A remarkable day yesterday, and I guess I misspoke yesterday when I was calling the rally up into before Christmas is the Santa rally, because strictly speaking, as far as I understand, the Santa rally is actually the one after Christmas. But regardless, a very strong session in the U.S. and in Europe. The U.S. S&P 500 seeing a very strong surge to new record highs, getting close to the 4,800 level. And Peter, you're back online with us, and you've been sort of wrapping up your thoughts for the year and putting perspective on what 2021 was all about. So we need to hear that. You put out a piece yesterday, and I think some of the themes are echoing what we've talked about before, the concentration in the market. But take us through what your thoughts are here heading into 2022.
Yeah, before I go there, just quickly, I mean, yesterday's session, as you can see in slide two on the theme baskets, it's very clear that this year's winners were the big winners yesterday. So you can see semiconductors, mega caps, cybersecurity, financial trading firms, etc. were leading the gains yesterday. And the latest economic data, and also the Chicago Fed activity index, is actually hitting 0.37, which is significantly above trend growth. It's only one data point since the great financial crisis, if you sort of strip out all the noise during the pandemic. So we are seeing a very strong U.S. economy right now, and I think with the no move in the yields in the U.S., I think that's really bolstering sentiment and equities as we roll into 2022. But I think things are shaping up, because I think this year was quite mind-boggling. I think it was Sting Dickerson that said it, John, on our internal call yesterday. That, I mean, if I told you that where inflation and especially core inflation would be this year, I don't think a lot of people have imagined that we could have seen, you know, a 22% gain in global equities. And it very much a year, I think, of there's a multiple of things. So one of the things where you had extraordinary earnings growth because of the massive stimulus globally. You can see that on slide four. So we are up 104% for the first 9 months of the year compared to the first 9 months of 2020. That's obviously a bad comparison. So if you take the first 9 months from 2019, we are up 28% in terms of profits in the MSCI world. I checked the revenue this morning just for comparison. We're actually flat, right? So we've had a massive earnings boost driven by massive margin expansion because companies have been extremely good at cutting costs during COVID. I think a lot of that tailwind will disappear as we roll into next year. We had in Q3 earnings season, we always already saw a lot of signs of company profit margins rolling over due to commodities. And I think the boost as well for equity. So one thing is the earnings growth, John, but even more importantly, I think that's a nice lead into your next topic, the yields, right? Because we had the galloping inflationary pressures. The Fed continued to say transitory. They threw in the towel at the end of the year, in this month, acknowledging it was more deep-rooted and broad-based. But the nominal yields never followed. And the nominal yields are what dictates the discount rate and cost of capital for cash flows. And it didn't go anywhere, basically, almost slightly up this year. And that boosted equities. And then I think a third factor, which I describe in this article, you can see on slide four, the link to the article, or the note, is the fact that because nominal yields stayed so low, the real yields just tanked. And I think that sort of forced a lot of asset allocators to, you know, reduce their, you know, exposure to bonds, because, you know, the expected real returns you can get on these bonds are so low that it's better to just increase your weight in equities and hope for the best, basically. So it's a little bit of a desperation move. I think that also helped equities this year.
Yeah. And precisely on that interest rate front. So it's interesting to see. I suspect some of this is some of the uncertainty around the Omicron variant clearing away. I want to, you know, argue too much for whether that is justifiable or not, but it seems to be the case. There's also a news item out yesterday that the US CDC will reduce the limitations from 10 days to 5 days so people can get back to work more quickly. But regardless, we're seeing interesting developments in the curve. And I think just before I go into my little spiel here, would highly recommend, I just tweeted it out on the @SaxoMarketCall Twitter feed, that it's worth having a look at that long conversation on YouTube between some pretty high profile folks out there at least an intelligent conversation on, is it inflationary pressures, deflationary pressures, or is there something sort of besides all this? And I think that's where I lean on where the risks lie going forward. And that is that it's very difficult for the Fed to tighten no matter what the inflation backdrop is because of the risks to financial stability. But it's between Mike Green, Jeff Snyder, and Harvey Bassman, and so-called convexity maven, the last of these. Pretty heated debate, if still a polite one, on the risks going forward. I particularly would highlight that one needs to listen to what Jeff Snyder is saying about the Eurodollar system being the key here for what the market is saying going forward. Basically, the Eurodollar market is saying, yeah, the Fed can tighten a little bit, but it's gonna crash everything if it tightens too much or if it tightens much. And I guess that's what the 10-year is also saying. It's either saying that or it's saying inflation is going to be transitory. So take your pick, but it's a very remarkable statement that the yield curve is making with these short rates coming up higher. And you can see on slide 3 that the probability of the March rate hike scenario is getting above 50-50 in recent days, around 60% now. And if you look at that September 22 Eurodollar short-term interest rate future, that's the one that's hitting new highs for the cycle, highs in rate anticipation, lows in price, as we price in the 3-hike scenario for 2022. But if you look further out the curve, December 24 short-term interest rate future, it's way, way off the lows, so way, way off the highs for the Fed anticipated rate, where the Fed can sort of get to before it essentially is forced to stop for one reason or another. So it's a very remarkable setup going into the new year with where equities are and with what the yield curve is saying. So I encourage folks to listen to that. It's a much more sophisticated and of course, longer form format that we do here on the Daily Saxo Market Call. But interesting to see how this shapes up into the new year. And then I briefly want to cover just a little bit on commodities, because we have a remarkable setup as well in crude oil. Not a remarkable setup, but an important development yesterday as we cleared sort of local resistance. You can see on slide 5, both in Brent and West Texas Intermediate crude grades, we cleared that local resistance line. You can see there the lower dotted line I drew in around or just below $77. And we sort of are back into the range that was the lows were established prior to the Omicron variant announcement. And of course, that massive shaded bar that fell there at the end of November was the announcement of the Omicron news. So a very key day yesterday. It sort of sets up the key bull bear line, if you will, basically the prior resistance line there for both crude grades. And then Peter, you provided a natural gas chart. It's quite interesting because we have European natural gas prices after that incredible new spike getting crushed yesterday, as we mentioned on yesterday's podcast, as some U.S. LNG ships are on the way to Europe to relieve at least the top of the pressure in terms of supply concerns. We have one of the strongest days in the U.S. Yesterday since I think it was October, as we have some quite cold weather on the way. But this is a really important development for Europe, and this needs to continue and a lot more to get to relieve some of the price pressures for industry and for the entire economy in Europe.
Yeah, I should have been a little bit better here on slide 6, because the insert of the temperatures predicted, this is for Friday, so on New Year's Day, and the green areas that you see all around Europe is actually around 5 to 7 degrees Celsius. So I should have put that in, but so basically you can see that the cold weather is sort of being pushed back across the continent. And obviously, as you said, John, that will be positive for energy markets in Europe, and with all the LNG supplies coming from the US, it potentially could alleviate a lot of that pressure that we have seen lately on Europe's industry and households. And I found it pretty disturbing. I think it was you, John, that you retweeted someone who put out this remarkable, what's it? You can say that, but I can't remember the tweet name. But
the long view, I believe it was.
The long view, exactly. Yeah. That Germany is over the next 12 months canceling a lot, or closing down a lot of nuclear power, and they're doing that with open eyes at where the current electricity prices are. I mean, I'm not sure I really understand Germany's real politics of all of this, or their thinking for their economy. But to me it sounds very odd. But I have long felt that Germany is quite out of step with the reality that at least that I see shaping up in the world in Europe, and what really needs to be done in Europe. I find Germany sitting more and more on the sidelines inside Europe of what really needs to be changing. But that's a personal opinion.
But that whole issue is going to be very interesting because there already is a focus within Europe in two very different sides. And is on eurointelligence.com. I recommend following them. They have occasional free articles, just great commentary on Europe if you're feeling like you're not getting good European commentary in the English language. So eurointelligence.com, the former FT great Wolfgang Münchau, talking about that France is very pro-nuclear and very loud about it, and maybe louder about being pro-nuclear than Germany is about being anti-nuclear. But specific to what you said, Peter, of course, that doesn't necessarily stop them from shutting down this further capacity at a time of an absolute disaster of a crisis in terms of pricing. So very interesting to see how that debate shapes up in the new year, especially post the French election in the spring. And then let's just all round out the FX space. We got some more single stock focus in a moment, but I think it's quite interesting to consider. We've seen dollar yen ramping quite strongly, even while those longer US yields, as we've discussed, have remained quite suppressed and range bound. Normally dollar yen very responsive to especially the long end of the yield curve. Yes, there are some other factors here that are yen negative, like the carry trade coming back in as emerging market currencies have surged. We have very, very strong risk appetite, but still feel like dollar yen is outperforming a little bit. And then I was pulling up a dollar yen chart this morning, and I noticed that there's a pattern around quarter end and quarter beginning. So I've put that on slide 7. You can see how especially that March to April quarter last year, and that is also the end of the Japanese financial year, and end of March, saw a dollar yen extreme ramp and then reversal, potentially on U.S. Treasury buying there. And no coincidence, probably, that U.S. Treasury yields also peaked out around the same time. And then we have the June, July, Q2, Q3, and then the Q3, Q4 transition as well. So just putting it out there as something to watch on the calendar roll, which could be quite interesting for the U.S. dollar. In terms of themes, we're seeing some underperformance from the yen, as noted. We're seeing we're seeing a bit of a pickup momentum from petro currencies, especially the Norwegian krona, where the rate outlook has stayed quite strong there. And there could be some seasonal effects as well. But Peter, you have a couple of single equity focus stories, even though we have no real earnings afoot here. So what's your focus as we watch these last couple of sessions of the year?
Yeah, one of the big stories that have come up is Meta, or Meta Platforms. It's called the parent company of Facebook. So that stock gained 3% yesterday, and it's based on news that have been flourishing for some have been around for a week at least, that the sales of Oculus, their augmented reality or virtual reality headset, has been really a blockbuster this holiday season. And that's driving the whole discussion about the metaverse, because the metaverse for Facebook or Meta is of course driven by hardware sales, because you need to strap on these headsets to enter this universe. So that's a key part of their strategy. So that has boosted the stock price. I will say, on a more cautionary tale, that a couple of holiday seasons ago we had massive sales of the voice speakers from Google and Alexa from Amazon, and there's a lot of headlines about this was a huge pivotal moment, it was the new technology would change a lot of things, and hey, you could talk to this device and it could turn off your light. Who thought we missed that, right? And these days not a lot of people are talking about these voice speakers any longer. And so I just think, and as a personal opinion again, I think a lot of consumers just always just trying to find the next thing. It doesn't necessarily that it will be a long-term trend.
I agree with that. And I just also speaking strictly on a personal level, we had one of my children that bought one of these Alexa speakers, and it basically ended up becoming a brick that he didn't even bother to take to off to college with him, and was essentially used as an alarm clock as its only function.
I need to tell this funny story, John.
Go ahead.
Podcast. I got it as a Christmas present from my sister-in-law, I think 3 years ago. She works for Google, and I got it, and I turned it on, I put power on it, and I used it one time, and then after 6 months I hadn't used it at all, and I asked her, so what do people use this device for? I can't come up with a single use case. And she said, well, we know from our surveys that a lot of people, they the first thing they do in the morning is asking the Google speaker for what's the weather is going to be like today. And I was like, what? I checked that in my weather app already. It takes 2 seconds on my phone. I don't need to speak into the room.
Or God forbid you should look outside to see what the weather is like.
Anyway, I just thought it was so funny.
Finally, on the Oculus sales, as a parent of 4 kids, I will never buy one of these devices. I don't want to see my kids with a device strapped to his or her face. So
no. Anyway, right.
I'll let you continue. Sorry, our soapbox minute is over there.
Yeah. And then Alibaba, it didn't really move in Hong Kong trading today, but I think it's a very important signal. So the Global Times, which is seen as sort of the public opinion paper of the Chinese government, had an op-ed this today saying that the company will escape the dark woods in 2022. And they said the op-ed talks a lot about that Alibaba is investing more in tier two cities in China. They are sort of leaving this single app strategy and expanding into other parts. And obviously that's part of China's, the government's wish for these technology companies to be less market dominant in this single app strategy. I don't know how much to read into it, but I think it is quite important when you have the biggest newspaper, the most important newspaper for the Chinese government, writing an op-ed about Alibaba. So that might be your clue and a catalyst for 2022. There was no reaction. So use technicals for your entry in Alibaba stock. We are on slide 8 in the slide deck, by the way. Novo Nordisk CEO is out with an interview. The stock is up in early trading here in Europe. He's saying that they are prioritizing growth targets more than profitability in the short term, as the company has seen its market share in the industry decline for, I think he says in the interview, 7 years. So Eli Lilly and Sanofi is their two main competitors in the insulin market, which is a drug against diabetes. I would highlight CAC 40, which is the benchmark index in France. The country is introducing new, more COVID restriction on the Omicron variant. They could be short-lived, but at least if you're trading this index, it creates some opportunities short-term. And then I would highlight the U.S. airliners. I agree with things are leaning towards on the positive side on the Omicron, John. I think in the U.S. for the airliners specifically, the potential risk-off catalyst for these are that the testing is very low in the US, so a lot of the I think the market could be surprised that suddenly the US government would be forced to at least in the short term create a lot more restrictions and specifically as well China recently increased their requirements for cleaning airliners. So you had this Delta airline flying from the US to Shanghai. It had to turn around mid-air and go back to do more cleaning. And Delta Airlines basically saying that that situation is very fluid because it operationally and economically doesn't make any sense because it's very costly to do this new requirements of cleaning. So I would put in US airliners as a potential group that you could trade short-term because of all this noise around Omicron and potential restrictions.
Yeah, I suspect there will be very low on any official restrictions, but the problems could come in what we're already seeing in places. And that is simply there's so many healthcare workers, for example, getting COVID, they have to be home for at least a few days because they can't work with their, running around with the virus raging and risking further spreading. So it could be in personnel simply being sick and having to stay at home for a few days, hopefully, which is the case with Omicron, instead of getting properly sick. But interesting you mentioned China because I hadn't mentioned it, but they do have their worst outbreak in this Shaanxi province, where the largest city, Xi'an, 13 million people. They're going through the entire population of that city being tested for the fourth time. Very, very, very different approach to on the tolerance level and on the restrictions level. And I wonder how long that can continue. And then on the note on Omicron in general, the tricky bit is that South Africa saw its outbreak from a very, very low level. It spiked very dramatically, but the whole episode peaked and started reversing within 2 weeks. So after the discovery of the Omicron variant, whether it started there, it doesn't matter. That's where they discovered it and measured its outbreak. But we're reluctant to carry that message or that lesson or experience to other countries because A, it's in the wrong hemisphere. So it's summertime there, not wintertime here. And B, it was happening with a backdrop of a very low vaccinated but highly infected. In other words, a country that had seen lots of infection, a lot of potential partial herd immunity, and was not experiencing a wave otherwise. And then in Europe, we were having a Delta variant surge before Omicron got layered on top of that. So if Omicron takes over and is taking over now, I think it could be a very short time frame once that takeover has happened to a reversal. So I'll be watching especially the UK, which I think is the most advanced in this process and has the least restrictions. And then I'll watch the US day to day for A, hospitalization, so health impact, and then B, just the case count itself starting to roll over, hopefully within perhaps a week or two. But again, this is all speculation and just an indication of what we're watching for. It's very much an unknown. The market seems to aggressively be saying this is not going to be a problem. All right. And then on the macroeconomic calendar front, really not worth mentioning, but you can see those on slide 9, U.S. House Price Index and another regional Fed survey today. The last remaining data point of interest for this week will be the U.S. weekly jobless claims up on Thursday. Okay, that's a wrap for today. And we will be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.